welcome one and all once again to Duel World in episode 161. I am joined this week by Martin.
Hello!
And by Daniel.
Greetings.
So, it has been an extremely fun-filled week in the gaming world, and we will get to all of that in a second. Just like most game developers, it doesn't necessarily need to cut here at the start. So, I want to kick it off with what we've been playing as usual, and I get to be selfish this week. I'm just going to go first. The Mario Kart 8 DLC, the first DLC pack came out this week. They really should have named these things. If you don't know, you get 5 new tracks, 3 remakes, 3 new characters, including Link from The Legend of Zelda, and 4 new vehicles, including a Hyrule-themed motorbike and an F-Zero Blue Falcon race kart. It's DLC, and I don't want to say it's DLC done right. I think other people have done it well as well. It's just really nice to kind of have DLC that isn't price gouging and doesn't really feel... Like, a lot of that stuff feels like it could naturally have fit into the game, but it doesn't feel like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they cut this from the game. It feels like a lot of fan service. It is a lot of fan service. 3 of the new tracks are based off of other Nintendo franchises, including one from the...
Also, it came out quite a while after the release, so that also helps in reinforcing the feeling of this is not something that was just cut.
Yeah, I was also going to say to that note, I think it was an ingenious thing by them. I think it really depends on the game, but because it came so far afterwards, it kind of got people back into the game, and a lot of games are kind of front-loaded, and people talked about Mario Kart during the summer, but it kind of died down as other games came out. And I felt like there was a huge fever around it this week as well, since everybody was kind of buying the DLC and talking about it. And I hope this becomes a system-wide feature, if not on this. I doubt on the Wii U, but on the future Nintendo console. But like that replay function where you're able to kind of save videos and edit them and share them with people just always seemed to mine gold. Like, that was the whole sum of the Luigi deaths there, and now people are doing it with, like, I mean, there were pictures of, like, an all, like, 12 people playing as Link, which I think is kind of annoying, but whatever. And then there was, like, he doesn't have a death stare, but he has, like, the young dead eye, because he doesn't have any emotion. So he's just, like, staring into the screen, and that became a thing this week. And again, it's kind of, I mean, when you don't have a ton of games, it helps to kind of get people invested in the ones you do have. And I think going into the key part of the holiday season, it's good to kind of have people talking about your system and talking about your games in a positive light, especially when it's online and actually works, as we'll get to in a bit.
The only thing that bums me out about the DLC are some of the new characters.
You mean the fact that they're Mario and Peach again?
Yeah, exactly. Now we have like 3 or 4 variations of Mario or Peach in there. You could have added, I don't know, some other characters.
Yeah.
Not like you don't have enough.
Or even if you wanted to add more Mario characters, add other... Because it's Baby Mario, it's Mario, it's Metal Mario, it's Tanuki Mario, it's Baby Peach, it's Peach, it's Pink Gold Peach, and now it's Cat Peach. So you have, like, I kind of went with it in the game just because I understand Mario and Peach are the 2 big people of this franchise. So you want a Mario and a Peach for a light, heavy, and medium weight class. I kind of went with that, even if I thought it was stupid. This doesn't make any sense because you already have them covered for everything. This is literally just like more Mario and more Peach.
Yeah. Well, they don't have to do any more animations, so I guess it works for Nintendo.
Well, that's not even true, because they do unique animations for them.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Huh.
They do, because, well, they do unique animations for all of the Marios and Peaches in the games, and they also have, like, slightly different voice pitches as well. But Tanuki Mario, like, when you do stunts and stuff, people do various taunts. One of his is he turns into a statue, like the costume does. And that's a new animation that wasn't in the game. He waggles his tail, another animation that wasn't in the game. So they have new animations for these characters. So it's not like it was being cheap. It's really just like, these are the 2 big ones. We're going to do it again.
Yeah, and I would have loved to have seen, like, I don't know, if they added, like, the same characters they have amiibo support for. Like, a Captain Falcon, for example. Or a Samus and stuff like that.
You have a trailer where Kirby's in it, but he's not in the game. Yeah. Come on, Nintendo.
Yeah, I mean, I think, especially being that the real, I mean, everybody really just kind of gravitated towards Zynx because I think that's more of a novelty than Mario and Peach in Mario Kart. It's because this is the first non-Nintendo character, non-Mario character in Mario Kart, which isn't, you know, necessarily true. You had Rob, which is outside that spectrum, but yeah, everybody kind of did that. And it also made me think, it would have been awesome if they did what they did with the Koopa Troopas and the Shy Guys and then have different colored tunics for him, because like, that picture with like 12 inches, you just realized it's like 12 people wearing the same green tunic. That said, I also think Ink is kind of an adorable addition to the game. And it happens with other characters, but Ink stands out more because he has more human proportions. He does not fit into anything. So you see, like this, I think it would have been a case they should have used Toon Ink in this case, but I do like how it just stands out because he fits in, and then because Zed comes up to his arms because they actually have him in the proper proportion.
Yeah, I saw some screenshots of it. I think that looks hilarious. I think it's great that they do it that way.
It's funny. It's just like, oh, poor guy. He can't even fit into that cart properly, and he's driving.
Also, one of the funniest things for me was just for whatever reason the video of Link driving a Mercedes and Mario Kart. I don't know.
Speaking of, did you see those new Mario Kart commercials?
No.
They have it in Japan. It's the Mario Kart Mercedes-Benz tie-in commercials. And it's like this one where like, Luigi comes out of the car, like the real life Luigi actor comes out of the car and starts breakdancing. It's really just out there and insane.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would just say, I think all of the new tracks are fantastic. I think even the old tracks are fantastic. My favorite part of this whole DLC, honestly, though, is the music. It is... Like,
I have seen the... I want to agree with you, partly... Well, I have not seen all the tracks. I seen the Zero track, which I thought looks awesome. And the Zelda track is also really great, especially since they... not only have, like, I think what you wanted to say, all this cool remixed music, but also have, like, Zelda sound effects for everything, and there are rupees instead of coins on the track and stuff like that. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there was a lot of little touches like that. Like, for instance, the F-Zero track, you don't collect coins. Instead, you have to go on, like, the boost pads, and you get coins on that, and that's a nice little touch as well. I do have the little fan service. Like there's an actual Mario theme track in Mario Kart, and it's from one of the bosses in Mario Galaxy 2, and it's really awesome. But what I thought was great was the attention to detail again, because there's a part where you go through like a little tunnel, and when you go through the tunnel, there's actually like cave drawings of like different like the sumo troopers. I don't know if you remember them from Super Mario World, but like, you had like the sumo one and stuff like that, and there's cave drawings of them on the wall. I'm just thinking, like, most people just drive through this, and it's so awesome that they took the time to actually make it something important and visually cool to see.
Imagine this. What if Nintendo made Nintendo Kart? Imagine the creativity that could go into that.
Nintendo should have started doing that a long time ago, to be honest.
I'm of two minds about that. I do think they should do a more expansive... I think they should have more crossover franchises. I mean, right now we have Smash Brothers and we have Nintendo Land, which people don't count because it's not technically a crossover, it's themed. I do think they should stick to Mario Kart, and I think they should have an alternative as well.
They can do the Sega deal and just call it Mario Kart and Friends and be done with it.
But not that really. I was thinking more like, I mean, going back, I mean, I guess more like, I want something, an alternative to Mario Kart. I still want Mario Kart. I still love Mario Kart. But something like Diddy Kong Racing, or even the room, you know, like when they were working on Donkey Kong Racing, where it's like, it's not just carts or it's not just driving on. Like, Mario Kart does the air and ground now, but it's different than like Diddy Kong, which actually had you racing on the time.
So we're talking Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing Transformed then?
Yeah, pretty much that. but you know, when people actually buy it. But yes, I do think they should expand it, especially if they want to keep Mario Kart as a one game of gen franchise. It would make sense to have a backup, say like, okay, this is Mario Kart in 2014, we'll have a Nintendo Kart in 2016, And then we could do Mario Kart again when we launch our next system without having to double down and do Mario Kart again. Because it is, right now, their biggest brand. And the Wii U needs all the help it can get. The other thing I like about the DLC, I think, is how they simplify it as far as online goes. I think we've had this discussion before. A lot of games tend to just kind of divide the audience. And it's like, okay, if you want to play this, play this. You need to have these maps. If you want to play this, play this. You need to have this map pack or whatever. And they do something like that, but different. Like, you go in, and you just basically get to pick. So it's like, oh, I want to play worldwide. So it's, you can pick from 32 tracks. You can pick from 40, which is the addition of the new 8. Or you can just pick from the new two sets of maps. And it's like, okay, that's it. That's all you do. And from then on, you get matched up with people who have those, who can pick from this group. And I assume if you don't have the DLC, you probably just go in like normal and you wouldn't even notice.
That's a better solution than most first-person shooters do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like, okay, I have these maps. I don't want to have to worry about jumping between failures. Just let me go. And I thought that was great. And it works the same way with friends. You can set up tournaments and you can create rooms and you can say, okay, you know, these maps are required or this is what we're going to pick from and stuff like that. And it's... Yeah. Fine, and I thought that was great and simple and not overly complex, or it doesn't make you feel bad if you don't have the DLC pack. I also thought the download went really quicky and smoothy, and there was no problem. I think it was up like, somebody said it was up at 3 a.m., so that was random, but whatever.
I think it was released around midnight here, so that might have been it.
Yeah, but yeah, it's there, it's fun, it's cheap. It adds to an already, I think, a very stellar game. I think going back to it, because I kind of skipped out on it during the summer, I also think it's a very visually pleasing game. It's really nice, basically.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of nice to be reminded that. It's probably the best looking game on the Wii U right now. Which doesn't say a ton for a lot of people, but... yeah. So... I mean, I guess continuing to be selfish, and if you follow me on Twitter, which you two do, you've already seen my continuing saga with my new Xbox One, which, as of this recording, I bought a week ago, and I played all of 15 minutes with, partially because I've been busy, but partially because of my fantastic voyage with the Halo Master Chief Collection. I bought the Halo Master Chief Collection on Tuesday during a buy two, get one free sale. And, like, with all great Xbox One games, apparently, and nobody gives me the heads up on this, you have to install part of the game.
Yep, and the installing process on the Xbox One is apparently really slow compared to the PS4.
But not only do you have to install part of the game, but you also had to download a 15 gig day one patch.
Yep.
And between the combination of the two... And just to be fair, I mean, I could have played some of the game. Like, some of the campaigns were finished. But the game proper wasn't finished installing until Friday morning. So, just so we're clear, Tuesday afternoon, all your Wednesday, all your Thursday, I could not use my brand new system because it was trying to install the game I bought to play on Tuesday. And it drove me up the wall. By the end of it, I just found it funny because I'm like, I really just want to send the system back now. It's been a week. I've got to play Titanfall a couple of times. And Titanfall was the same thing because I got Titanfall on Sunday. I had to update the system because it was brand new. I had to update Titanfall. I had to install Titanfall before I could play it. And then it was like... The same thing with the Halo Master Chief Collection. I have Shadow of Mordor, and I'm afraid to open that because I don't think I'm ever going to get to use my system this weekend if I do.
Well, this is something that I've been... It's annoyed me for a long time, is, like, it used to be a point in time where, like, when you bought a console and you just stuck the disc in and that was it, you were playing the game. And all those stupid people that decided to play games on PC, you have to wait for this and you have to update that and then you have to do the other to get your game to work. And now it's just amazing that it's like just a complete opposite where everything just seemed like when PC seems to work, it works so much more elegantly than the consoles do, because you have to update your console's firmware, and that takes longer than it should for some reason, and then you have to copy the entire disk off into your hard drive, and then you have to wait for a 15 gig patch because they didn't want to give you another disc, and it's just...
Yeah, okay, you mentioned...
I do have to say, though, that, like I said, my PS4, I got my new PS4 this week, by the way, didn't have that much of an issue. I updated the firmware because I didn't have the newest one on it. That took like 5 minutes, I think. And then I put in Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, and within 2 minutes I was ready to play.
Yeah, I was going to say, Daniel brought up a point, and maybe I did it wrong, or maybe I... But yes, it installed the entire Halo Master Chief Collection onto my hard drive.
Yeah,
yeah, this
but
is not, no, that's
all
that's
these
how,
consoles do now.
Yeah, this is how next gen works. Is
why?
Because the Blu-ray drives that we have currently are just too slow to load all the assets off the disc.
Exactly.
But I get, even then, I thought the install process was to make it faster. Because I have not, like I said, I've played 15 minutes of my console so far. I am down 25% of my hard drive already. Between the Master Chief Collection, which is like 60-some-odd gigs, and Titanfall.
And this is the thing, right, is what has happened is the games industry has decided that they're going to massively blow up the resolution for these the assets for these games, but they haven't decided. They realized, oh, hang on, the technology that we're supposed to be using to read these files off the discs hasn't improved all that much. So we're just going to have to work around that, and that solution is to copy everything off of the disc.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because I avoided going digital with this console because I figured I would save some space. I didn't think that I'd buy a retail game, and it's like, oh yeah, we're just going to copy the whole thing anyhow. It defeats, and I still need the disc to play, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
But going digital will be even worse because the download speeds are terrible.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm going digital because, I mean, part of the reason you go physical is also because you have a resale market. You can't do that digitally. And a lot of retailers, at least at launch, don't really match the price. Like, digital stores don't really match the price you can. Like, I bought it as part of a buy two, get one free sale. So technically, it worked out to like $40. Just real quick, while I'm hogging up all the time at the start, and I'm sure Martin will appreciate this one, I bought Hyrule Warriors as well.
Woo!
And I've been having an absolute blast with that game. It's just fun. There's a ton of.
Oh, you're telling me that Musou games are actually fun? Is that what you're telling me?
I've never said anything against Musou games. I just never really had a reason to buy them. And yes, I will be completely honest. Having a Zelda face paint really helped this one. For me to be interested in it. But yes, it's a ton of fun. And I think the biggest thing to me is that it just gives the entire game a sense of urgency because so many things are going on, and you're just running from point to point trying to capture points or trying to defeat bosses or trying to help out your comrades during the war and stuff like that. And it's just kind of like, it's hectic, but it's hectic in a good way. Like, you're just beating the crap out of people, and it feels so good. It feels so right. And I love the fact that, you know, and I'm sure Martin can attest to this. Personally speaking, going into this, I thought Musou games were kind of like, oh, you just keep on pressing X and stuff like that. But there's a combat system involved here as well.
Yeah.
There's combos. You can upgrade your characters to earn different moves. Most of the characters have multiple weapons, so you get to try that out. Like, I was just talking about it on Twitter. I wasn't a huge fan of Impa because she starts off with a giant sword. I've never really been a fan of, like, characters with show moves and stuff like that. Not that many of the enemies in this game kind of attack you aggressively on normal difficulty, but I've always kind of preferred faster movement. And then I got her fire staff. I forget what it's called, like Nagatsi or something like that. And she just becomes this amazing character for me because she's just mowing through people, and like her strong attack when you combo it is she just kind of piles forward like a whirlwind, and it's amazing. And
the thing about Musou games is there is some death there. You're just not going to see it by playing two missions of it. And on top of that, what also people don't seem to know is that you will probably can already attest to that. These kind of games usually also have tons of content, which is nice. And sure, they are not as demanding when you talk about the combat system as Devil May Cry or something, but they don't want to be. They are somewhat casual affair, except if you bump up the difficulty, then it can be more challenging. But that's fine. That's what these games want to be, and for that, I really enjoy them.
Yeah, I mean, as people always, and myself included, always kind of lament the death of the beat-em-up. Then, like, this is literally what the beat-em-ups were in 3D now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you just pick up stuff off the floor as you defeat enemies. And, yeah, it's a blast. I mean, I can possibly see how some people might get tired of it by 20 hours. But truth be told, if I get bored of a game 20 hours in, I'm okay because I've had 20 great hours leading up to that.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it offers, like you said, it offers a ton of great content. There's a story mode, which I kind of laugh at because, hey, the story in this game is just really ridiculous. So I'm just like,
let me tell you a secret. All the stories in Musou games are ridiculous. They, like, when you see a Dynasty Warrior game and it claims to retell Chinese history, it's fucking ridiculous, right? But most people don't experience it that way. But yeah, all these stories are kind of ridiculous, and they all kind of become more about like what these goofy characters are going to be on about next, because the characters are kind of the stars, and the main story kind of becomes irrelevant.
Yeah, so that's kind of what it is. Like, some of them I just kind of skip. I'm like, I honestly don't care. Like, just point me in the direction of stuff I have to beat up, and I'm good to go. But yes, and like you said, there's the story mode. There's also kind of the adventure mode, which is, I think, a lot of doused in Zelda nostalgia. As you go through kind of an overworld that's reminiscent of the original Zelda games, and you get many challenges there as well. So yeah, I think, for my money so far, it's been a blast. I've had absolute fun playing it, which is all I can ask for, really. It's just something that, it's just enjoyable to play. That's all I can say. And it sounds like I'm grinning from ear to ear. I literally just stopped playing as soon as we started recording this. It works on the gamepad, which is great for me, when I was installing stuff on my Xbox One. So yeah.
Yeah, I still need to pick it myself. I haven't picked it up yet because I wasn't sure if I want to get Hyrule Warriors or if I want Samurai Warriors 4. But at this point, I've made up my mind to get Hyrule Warriors, I think, down the line, because maybe by the end of the year. Just because it's something different from the Warriors franchise, in the sense of an IP that hasn't been used for a Musou game yet.
Yeah, I don't know if Nintendo wants to follow up with this. I would think so, because apparently it's one of the most successful launches of a Musou game in the West.
Cool. It would be cool if they do a sequel. That would be really cool. I mean, they already did some cool things compared to the other Musou titles, but I can totally see how they could even further Zelda-fy this in ways.
Yeah, I was going to even say, not even necessarily Zelda. I like Zelda and I like Mario, but Nintendo doesn't need to rely on those two. I think it would be awesome, an awesome engine for Fire Emblem.
I mean, they are doing a Dragon Quest Musou game, kind of.
Yeah.
So, why not Fire Emblem? It would totally work.
Yeah, especially.
Could probably even use someone of the same framework.
Oh, they could use the exact same framework. They could literally just retell Awakening with more action and combat. So.
And there is some strategy to it as well, because obviously you have to make sure that you're managing the right things in when you're actually playing it. So
the strategy is mostly like time management, how do I fight my time.
It's still sort of an interesting twist if you were to mix it with Fire Emblem.
If you want more strategy, there are also the spin-offs, the Empire spin-offs that they only do for the Samurai Warriors and Dynasty Warriors games. Those have even an overall map on which you can direct your armies, and then you go into battle, and then it's the standard Musou thing and stuff like that. So they even have games for people who want even more strategy in these games.
Essentially what I'm saying is, if you haven't, check it out. It's really just a blast. Not that I'm done showing what I had to show, but have you two been playing recently?
Since I got my PS4 back, and I needed something to make sure this disk drive works. I mean, it's a new PS4, but I still wanted to make sure, so far, there's nothing out yet I want to play, kinda, but so, I don't know, let's get Call of Duty. So I checked on Call of Duty.
It could have been worse. You could have got an AC Unity, which we'll get to in a bit.
And I have to say, this Call of Duty is probably the best Call of Duty since Modern Warfare 2. I mean, I kind of skipped the last two. I mean, I played a bit of them. Just I didn't own the games. And the campaign is not garbage. It's actually fun and engaging. I mean, you can see some of the story twists from miles away and stuff, but it's still fun, and Spacey, Kevin Spacey, having him in there is fun. They do some, they have some pretty cool levels. One thing I was really surprised by was one stealth level that was more open than you would expect from a Call of Duty. They even give you like a grappling hook and you can go up buildings with that and decide which way you want to tackle the mission and stuff like that. It was really surprising to me. So yeah, actually a good campaign. The multiplayer still feels a lot like Call of Duty, but of course the exosuit switches things up in the sense of giving you lots of movement options. But I didn't feel like that changed the game enough for me to keep me playing further. So then I moved on to the co-op mode, and which I thought I would really like, but kind of didn't. It's basically like the Spec Ops mode they had in the Infinity Ward games, and I wasn't a big fan of those either, just because it's just wave-based survival with semi-mission stuff on multiplayer maps. And I am one of those guys that actually enjoys the zombie stuff more, because they were maps specifically designed for the survival stuff, and were more involved when it comes to doing objectives and stuff like that. That's something I enjoy more in the co-op. So yeah, I guess if you are into Call of Duty and you will get the season pass, I guess then it will be alright, because as we heard, the zombie missions will be coming with the season pass. But yeah, right now I feel like, yeah, I have done the single player and I've played my fair bit of multiplayer, so I'm done with the game. But definitely one of the better Call of Duties. Definitely better than last year's, which, I mean, I only played a bit of, but that game was terrible.
It's not hard. I played it for like an hour and I... Oh.
Yeah. It wasn't good. I played about the same amount. It's not good. Although, no, I played probably a bit more because I played some multiplayer as well. Yeah, but this game I can actually recommend. If you want your big shooter that has lots of set pieces, this is a fun game, actually. Also, it looks really good, I think. I was quite surprised how good it looks. The other thing I played a lot of was Binding of Isaac Rebirth, which is free on PlayStation Plus right now. And I played a bit of Binding of Isaac before, but never got big into it on the PC, just because that game was based on Flash, and after a while it ran terribly, and stuff like that. But this version now, that it has this new 16-bit like art style, it runs really well, it has tons of new content, I'm getting really into this. I don't know how much you guys know about Binding of Isaac. It basically is to break down as a twin-stick shooter that is also a roguelike, and you go through Zelda-like dungeons and try to survive until you kill Mom. It's really addicting, like trying to get these items and figuring out which items are good for you, which items are bad for you. Is it worth taking a risk of maybe going through this door, which will make me lose life, but might get me a specific item that then could help me fight the boss in this level so I can get further? Or should I just stick with the life I have and the items I have and try the boss? Stuff like that. It's super fun. And the last thing I played today, not much yet though, like what have I played, 80 minutes of it according to Steam, is a game I assume will be talked about quite a bit in the next few weeks. It came out yesterday. It's called This War of Mine. And it's by 11-Bit Studios, the guys who did the Anomaly games that are reverse tower defense. But this game is something completely different. It's a survival game. Let's say this. We cross survival game with The Sims. So you have a group of three, you start out with a group of three civilians in a war zone, because a war is going on for years, you are civilians, and all you want to do is somehow survive during this war. So, you start out in this completely shut up house, and first thing you can do is like try to find it's 2D from the side, and you basically just control the different characters by clicking on them and then telling them what to do. So try to find scavenge for stuff and maybe find some materials, start maybe building a bed because they will get tired, so they have to get some sleep. Or they will get hungry, so you better find some food and stuff like that. So that's all the day stuff. You basically try to improve your house, try to make these civilians as comfortable as possible in a war zone. And during the night, then, you can go out and actually scavenge with your people. And the world will then be populated with different locations, like, for example, a supermarket and stuff like that. And every location has, like, different items that you can find. There might be materials, some locations might have more medicine, others might have more food, like the supermarket, for example, has more food. And at that point, it's still, like, this mouse-based gameplay of you just clicking where the person needs to go and stuff, but it kind of turns stealth-like in the sense that every action you do makes noise. There can be people in these locations. Some people can be friendly, some people can be of danger to you. There can also be soldiers, so maybe you don't want to be found. Other times you can just try to steal from people. I will give two examples of what happened to my current group of survivors, civilians. I mean, this also, I just love this concept of this being during a war zone, not some post-apocalyptic thing. It was that I went to the supermarket, and what happened was I looked through the key of one of the doors and then saw that there was a soldier, and the soldier was having a dialogue with this woman and told her, "What are you doing here?" And she said, "I'm just looking for some food. I can give you some food if you do a favor for me." So basically what was going to happen was that the soldier was going to rape that woman. So I had this decision to make. The soldier was kind of busy, so do I use the situation and steal more stuff from the supermarket? Or do I maybe go and try and help that woman? And what I did at first was I just tried to steal stuff because my people were hungry and I need to get food. But then after a while I felt bad when I heard the further dialogue. So I went in there, distract the soldier, the woman was able to flee, and then the soldiers shot my person. It kind of sucked.
Did you die or get injured?
I died.
Oh.
So I only had two survivors left. another thing that happened to me was I found this old house and there were just two old people living there and they couldn't defend themselves and were just afraid of me when I broke in. So I kind of just used the situation and stole all their stuff and left them there. yeah. And the interesting thing is, all these characters, then when you come back after a night of scavenging, then some dialogue happens, in slight dialogue, and you have these portraits of the characters to choose which one you want to play with at the bottom right. And every one of them also has a biography, which gives you like quick insight who these people are and what their specialty is, in a sense. And but what also happens, after every night, that biography basically updates with their thoughts. So after the thing, after when I stole the stuff from the old person, the character I played with was sad because he didn't know what would happen to these people, because we saw all the stuff and he basically told the other guys, so they all became sad. That was a status on my character. It's not just hungry or cold or something, but sad. So that's something that affects these people, and then you will also have to deal with that. For example, there are different kinds of things you can do to distract people from the horrors of war, but it's difficult. I mean, you can find a book and use it to, like, try to distract yourself with reading something, but at the same time, that book can be used to fire the oven. Yeah, this game is super interesting, and in the way it plays, and the way it in that way combines its gameplay with the storytelling of this horrible situation.
And once again, what's the name of this game?
This War of Mine.
It's very interesting.
Intense.
It's really good to see something like this come from a studio that's just made tower defense games that...
Yeah.
Bit schlocky before,
it's,
you know.
Super interesting. I can only recommend checking it out. I think it's $20. It's not super expensive, and at this point I would say, like I said, 80 minutes is what I played, but at this point it seems like totally worth it. Interestingly enough, the game also starts off with a banner that they apparently work together with War Child. Which is interesting. So I guess there might be not just to raise awareness, but maybe they even work together with them for scenarios that might happen in that game. I don't know yet, but that might be horrible further down the road. We will see.
Sure.
Oh yeah, and there even is a trading mechanic. Like sometimes people can come by and then we'll just say there's someone at the door and you can decide to open the door or not, that, because that there can be someone who wants to trade with you, or it can also be someone who wants to raid you and all this kind of stuff. It's crazy. It's really cool.
Also, it looks like it might be available on mobile devices as well.
I don't know. I've only heard about it being on Steam. It's like PC, Mac, Linux. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Huh, Google might be lying to me. I don't see it on their website.
Maybe it's still coming to mobile. That might be.
Yeah. Before
I wouldn't doubt it, since it's basically like a point-and-click interface, so it would totally work on mobile.
Yeah. Before we get to Daniel, just wanted to say Jason joined us.
Howdy, everybody.
Howdy. So, Daniel, what have you been playing?
I haven't been playing anything. There is... The next thing to come out is, for me, is Pokemon, and that's in a couple of weeks still, unfortunately.
Oh, wait, that's not Friday for you, right?
No, I wish it was, but it's...
Oh, we get it on Friday?
Yes, it's Nintendo in Canada.
What?
Yeah, because that's the day Smash Brothers, Pokemon, and the Amiibos are on, so they decided to call it Nintendo.
Nintendo.
Jeez.
I mean, honestly, it's a great marketing slogan if you're going to have a bunch of stuff launch at once.
Yeah.
First Nindies, now Nintendo, what next?
Yeah, I hate Nindies. I get what they're going for, I hate the name. And I guess Jason joined us just in time, because you do have a game to talk about.
I have several, actually.
Well, Martin's already talked about Call of Duty.
Oh, okay, well. I will say this about Call of Duty, and I don't know if you had the same reaction, Martin, but the game looks a lot better than I was, like, it's one
yeah,
of the better looking games I've played on next gen.
I said that it actually looks really good.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing about it. I mean, it's kind of a popcorn experience, and I mean, it's still Call of Duty despite all the changes they've made, but the fact that it looks so good, you know, is part of the thrill ride. But I think the game you were other game I've been playing that you were referring to was Assassin's Creed Unity.
Oh boy.
And to be fair, I've actually not played that much of it, maybe the first hour or so. Only just got my first assassination mission now. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I haven't gotten far enough to experience like the rampant problems so far. I have seen some bugs, like NPC characters just getting stuck in curtains, and there's this crazy like graphical fighting going on between the curtain model and the character model, and that was really ugly. But that was probably the worst thing I've seen so far. I haven't fallen through the world or anything, but again, limited time. And speaking kind of to the opposite of how Call of Duty looks so good, Assassin's Creed doesn't really look that good. It looks good in certain parts. Like, it's really impressive. The vistas are really impressive, and how many people they can fit in the streets is awesome. But then, you know, you get up close for a cutscene, and, you know, the hair is just looks terrible. And this is kind of nitpicky, but, like, the hair is especially terrible, and then everything else is not much better. The faces are generic, particularly the main character, which is crazy. He's probably the most generic character in the entire game so far.
At least he has a face, which will get you in a bit, I guess.
I mean, they do play up, or at least so far they're playing up this, like, almost Romeo and Juliet type story, because he has a love interest that's a Templar, and it's kind of appropriate because it's set in France, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's Assassin's Creed. Like, there's not that much different. They have streamlined some of the traversal mechanics a little bit, particularly when you're moving quickly, like running through things. So now the right trigger is always, like, you know, your action or high profile or whatever, like always. But you can always use A to go up and always use B to go down. And this makes climbing down from buildings really easily and really quick, as well as, you know, sliding under objects when you're running away from guards and stuff. And then they've separated out stealth now as just holding the left trigger. So, I mean, they've tweaked it a little bit, but nothing, like, too crazy so far.
I have to say that Assassin's Creed Unity is just really bumming me out. I mean, for all the game they have been talking before of this being the next-gen experience and this game changing so much and stuff like that, it turning out like, well, it looks kind of prettier, but it runs like shit, and it's actually not that pretty, and actually you didn't change that much. The combat is still shitty, and I that game just seems like such a colossal bummer, even ignoring the further issues I guess we'll talk about next.
Yeah, I mean, it's I was able to get it for like a cheaper price, so it's what you'd expect from a new Assassin's Creed game. They've been kind of, you know, getting more and more stale with every iteration that they release on a yearly basis now. So.
But that's the thing. Is that enough? Is that still enough?
No, I don't think it is. I think it would benefit them to take a year or two off and really kind of reimagine the franchise a little bit.
Well, I mean, the problem with that, and I guess we'll see with this one, is that they continue to sell well, so Ubisoft doesn't have a reason to do that. Like, even with, I mean, because...
Yeah, some guys will buy a console bundle that comes with it even though they don't play the game.
Yeah, and then he will find somebody to buy it for cheap. But, yeah, it's... that's part of the problem. And I guess we can kind of transition to news.
But that's the problem there is more that, I don't know, some people just don't know, and the vast majority of people doesn't know, and all they do is buy their comfort food. I've been playing Assassin's Creed for 3 years. I guess I bought a new one. What else would I buy?
Yeah, the problem, to be fair, it's not terrible. It's just like more of the same.
Well, I was about to say, I think the problem with that though is if you lose people, it's really it's really tough to get them back. So, say they take a year or two off, and it's like, okay, we're coming back with a brand new Assassin's Creed. If people were kind of burnt on this, and people were kind of burnt on 3, I think people enjoyed React for the most part. I have no idea what people's impressions of Rogue is. And I think that's the other thing, is kind of doubling down on this year when neither one of them seemed
Rogue
to be special.
Rogue is even more of the same, since it's basically Black Flag 2.
Well, here's the thing, though, is when you have an annualized sequel, and especially one to the point where you're pushing out 2 games on one day, like, I don't think Ubisoft cares, because they're making the money now. They're going, like, and if Assassin's Creed stops making megabucks, they'll stop making it, and then they'll push Far Cry, for example,
into the
completely understand. It's the fire and forget strategy.
It's how Activision has been going for 10 years.
Yeah, make money as long as possible, as much as possible, for as long as it works. And if it one day Assassin's Creed doesn't sell, well, we just abandon it. Whatever.
Yeah,
it's a scorched earth policy.
Yeah.
And the problem with that
is... Remember,
they
were doing Splinter Cell 1 a year at some point, weren't they? You know? And now we don't get any Splinter Cell games because people don't like them.
I mean, they asked someone a year ago.
Last year, and it was really good.
That's the thing, though.
People didn't buy Blacklist. That's the problem. It's not that...
Ubisoft has multiple big franchises. Sadly, Assassin's Creed at this point probably not as big. But let's say Splinter Cell would be as big as Assassin's Creed and Far Cry, and I guess also Watch Dogs because it sold really well. Just imagine if they said, like, okay, we don't need to push out 2 or 3 of those in a year, and maybe we can, like, take some time off between these games, and then, okay, this year will be Assassin's Creed, the next year will be Far Cry, the year after that will be Watch Dogs. What if they would do that? How much they could actually change? How much they could actually do in reaction to what people think of their games? Because all the criticism that are now happening in Unity, you can bet your ass that nothing of the criticism will be reflected in the next game, because that is a completely different studio already working on.
Well, it's going to be reflected in how they talk about the game. It won't be reflected in the final product. And this is kind of the part of the vicious cycle, is that people will believe their rhetoric when it comes to E3 next year, and they're talking about, we heard your feedback, we're going to make sure that this is bigger and better than the one before it. Because when EA came out a couple of weeks ago, and their promise was that Battlefield Hardlines will work at launch, not that it will be a good game, not that it will be a fantastic new experience, that it will work, and that's the baseline of what you have to offer people to kind of get them on your side now. It's like, we've really kind of hit rock bottom.
On the other hand, you have to say, like, even Activision has this done better now at this point. If you think about how Call of Duty is now made, right? They now have 3 big studios, and every studio will have, like, some support studios, and they will each have 3 years for their game.
Yeah.
That's definitely better than having to shit one out in 2 or less.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, part of that with Call of Duty, though, and I'm kind of curious to see how this does. I think I noted this on Twitter, and you kind of said that, it's like, by this time, Call of Duty's been out for about 2 weeks now. And we didn't get the usually Activision's like, Call of Duty set some type of record for single day or first week or something. And we got nothing from this year so far.
They can't make those claims if they don't break anything.
Yeah, and that's kind of...
They are no longer breaking anything. That's the thing.
And that's
the high point of Call of Duty is over.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm worried about. Like, if this takes a dip, are they going to go back and be like, okay, we're going to go back to just the two a year? And
no, it actually sold better than Ghost, though. We already got that.
Yeah, but I think Ghost in the UK, and I think the part of the reason people said that was because Ghost had a scattered launch, and that Ghost didn't come out on all 5 platforms at the same time. Because
might be.
Because I think the Xbox One and PS4
version... But I would doubt that this game selling better just because of positive word of mouth.
It could be, but Ghost was also the whole point of the franchise so far.
Yeah.
Like, if they came out and said they're selling better than Black Ops or Black Ops, you know, or something like that, that would be understandable. Modern Warfare. What is the peak Black Ops 2?
I think probably the first Black Ops might be the peak.
Yeah.
because I know Modern Warfare 3 sold just and Ghost sold just in that, but I don't know what the absolute peak was for the franchise. And it doesn't, okay, because,
no,
I mean,
maybe Modern Warfare 3.
No, Modern Warfare 3 sold just in the one before.
I think it was,
And it must be the first Black Ops, I think.
I think it might be Black Ops 2.
No, that would have been after Modern Warfare 3.
No, what is it? Wasn't it Black Ops 2, Modern Warfare 3, then Ghost?
No, this was Black Ops, Modern Warfare 3, Black Ops 2.
Yeah.
Then Ghosts.
Okay, apparently I don't follow Call of Duty enough. And I mean
it's hard to keep track when they come out every year.
Well, kind of to the point with that, you mentioned Ubisoft kind of having one mega franchise and then getting a second mega franchise. It doesn't look like Skyend is just picking up the momentum they wanted to. Skyend is, I guess, the bulk of their business comes from the toy sales, but it doesn't seem like the software sales are doing that well.
They sell a lot of those, though.
They sell a lot of toys.
Yeah.
That's always been the bulk of the money, and I thought that was going to be the next golden eggs, but it's also going to become a very competitive market with 3i and the toys.
Yeah.
For better or worse. But I guess since we've been dancing around it and we are kind of in news now, Assassin's Creed Unity launched this week to a bunch of problems, technical problems. But I honestly think the biggest firestorm that it caused is the whole day one embargo business.
Actually, it's worse than a day one embargo business because they couldn't even publish their review. People couldn't publish their reviews when the game was officially available to buy.
I don't really
have a problem with day one embargoes that much. I mean, obviously, it's better to get the review ahead of time. But to me, this particular situation, it was like Martin alluded to, the game was already out. Like, I don't understand.
Well, not only was it out, it was, I think it was midday on Tuesday, which meant that, because usually it's like, oh, it's out digitally, whatever, you know, oh, you nerds buy it then. But yeah, you could go to Target, you can go to Walmart, you can go to Best Buy, you could literally pick up the game. Like, if you wanted to, somebody could have bought the game at midnight, rushed through it, and published a review before any actual publications could have done it. And that's kind of handicapping you. But yeah, the fact that it was set so late.
And then that it turned out the way it did.
Yeah, it just makes people think that they were hiding it. Because Far Cry reviews are out already, and that's out next week.
Oh yeah, and they were like, oh yeah, you can already put out these reviews. It's weird, right? It's weird. It shows which publisher has confidence in the product. And especially the Dragon Quest example is like super rare these days in this AAA space, that they basically allowed reviews to be out and videos and all kinds of stuff to be out a week before that game is officially launching. When was the last time EA did something like that?
I was going to say, it's kind of funny because Tuesday rolled around, we had reviews for Dragon Age Inquisition a week before that came out. We had no reviews for Assassin's Creed Unity, Assassin's Creed Rogue, Sonic Boom, for good reason, as we learned, or Lego Batman. So the four games that came out that day had no reviews before the game that's out a week from now. And I'm like, this is really backwards when you think about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're interested, Dragon Age did really well, so it's worth looking into.
Yeah,
but,
going like a little bit further back, Shadow of Mordor's reviews came out early, right? They had the confidence in it. It scored really well. And I'm sure it led to a huge sales boost, just like Dragon Age, I'm sure it will, too.
It's so decent. And October was weird. Not a lot of new games sold well. Alien's Isolation didn't do too hot. Shadow of Mordor did decently. There was no Drive Club or Sunset Overdrive. It was a weird month for MPDs. That said, it did take... I know Kotaku said that they're no longer going to do any reviews that have a post-launch embargo. Well, they
won't. But I have to say, I still don't understand why people agree to that in the first place.
Well, apparently, it's kind of like a blanket thing. They don't necessarily agree to it. It's like they get the... Like, Ubisoft just sends them the game, and it comes with this. Like, they sign off, okay, we agree. So it's just kind of like a... Kind of a gentleman's agreement.
Mm.
Because the assumption is if you break it, they won't send you the next game early.
Still, but why didn't no one go like, hey, why does this say not to publish our review by 12 p.m. if you're putting the game out at midnight?
Yeah, because it's great that Kotaku came out after the fact, being we're not going to do this anymore. But you are right. Like, a lot of reviews came out said, "Oh, we knew this game was terrible, and we felt bad that we couldn't tell you. You could have told us.
Yeah, could have decided to break embargo."
Yeah, if you think it's in the best interest of the consumer, you can just be like, "This game is terrible. Don't buy it." That's really all there is to it. But yeah, it's going to be interesting because it does create another problem. Because if they don't agree to this, then it's the same situation we're in now. Because then nobody's going to have reviews before launch because nobody has pre-release copies.
But the thing is, though, I get why embargoes can make sense, because their deadlines on the development, publishers don't want reviewers to rush the review, reviewers don't want to be in the rush of being the first. But if you have to do embargoes, people like this usually, at least on the big sites, they get their stuff like a week or more in advance. Why not make the embargo on the day before release? Why not?
I think we've had this discussion before. Like, ideally, to me, I think, like, if your game comes out on a Tuesday, I think your review should be up the Friday beforehand. If it comes out on a Friday, it should be up
I would even be happy if it was for Monday. It still would give people, if you were confident you have a great product, people could still go out and pre-order your game on that day.
Well, I think I think it depends, because, you know, like, you do get to, like, okay, here's the thing, and this is kind of the double-edged sword. When it comes to stuff like Assassin's Creed, Call of Duty, Battlefield, like, there's no concern that those games are going to be hard to find on launch day. They get great quantity. But if it's something from, like, Atlas, or if it's something from, you know, if it's, like, Bloodborne or something like that, where it's like, okay, you might not get it on, you might not be able to find a pre-order for it on Monday. I can kind of see why you'd pre-order. But yeah, but I guess on the flip side, it gives you plenty of time to cancel a pre-order as well.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on the site, because some people.
But if you don't want to be a dick to your consumers, then that's what you would do.
Well, part of it, though, is that the consumers have so much blind faith that they will pre-order a game a year and a half in advance.
Oh, yeah. I've seen people, like, even on Gaff, like, I don't get this. They watch E3, and then after E3, they go out and pre-order 6 games.
Yeah. Like,
what?
Oh, man, they got me on that CG trail. I can't wait. I make it a policy, and I try not to pre-order games. I mean, granted, it always kind of backfires because, like, launch week comes out, crap, where am I getting this game from now?
I only pre-order stuff that I have played before. And then
I only pre-order when I see raw gameplay footage.
But one, partially is because I wait until the last moment to see if I find an amazing deal. But, like, for instance, Smash Bros. Is out this week for us, and I'm like, now it's like, it's out in a week, and I'm like, I have no idea where I'm picking this game up from. I'm sure it's going to be an amazing game. It's Smash Bros. But I'm like, yeah. Like, I found it weird. I found it funny. We didn't talk about this, but the day, like, the Assassin's Creed the reviews dropped and stuff like that, two things happened that I thought was really funny. First was Nintendo announced the pre-order for Smash Bros. Is up. And I'm like, people are just going right back into that pre-order cycle. Granted, I don't remember a major launch issue for any Nintendo game.
Yeah,
that's because Nintendo games, they tend to do a lot of QA, and,
yeah, and
they don't have online components, so, you know.
The whole ordeal also got me thinking about, like, which companies can I still trust to deliver a product on day one that is not broken? And Nintendo was, for me, way up there on that list.
Yeah, there was a thread on that about Gap. I think Kojima was up there. Square was up there, I think, for a lot of people. Even though Final Fantasy 14 happened.
I wouldn't put Square in there, especially not if you also consider, like, PC ports and stuff like that. I would not put Square in there.
I think people said Capcom.
Capcom?
I think they have a pretty good track record. I mean, their game might not be great, but it's well tested.
Yeah, okay,
not
broken, okay. In the sense of just not broken, okay.
I was going to say Warner Brothers, but I don't necessarily, like, for the most part, but Arkham Origins was pretty damn broken. But Mortal Kombat, Injustice, the Echo games are usually pretty solid out of the gate.
Yep.
I saw people say Bethesda, and I kind of chuckled at that one.
Yeah,
wait, Bethesda should be at the fucking bottom of that list.
I guess technically Valve would be up there.
Yeah.
No, Valve should be at the bottom.
Nah, Valve is usually fine.
Have you not played a Valve game on PC?
I've played a lot of Valve games. I even played Half-Life 2 on day one. It was fine.
Single-player games are fine, but not multiplayer games.
I would say probably Blizzard is also still fine. I mean
Diablo 3.
Yeah, but that's just server load. That's different, I would say. Server load, I would not say, is a broken game.
Well, depends if you ask how Master Chief Collection. And the second thing, it's
weird when if that's just server load, they have to issue a couple of patches.
And you know what's funny about the Master Chief Collection is if Bungie had developed it, we wouldn't have had this problem. Bungie don't release broken games.
I was going to say, and the other thing that happened...
Just saying, Destiny didn't have that problem. They had proper tests.
Exactly. Bungie's QA department is godlike.
The second thing that happened that day that I thought was really funny was Just Cause 3 was announced, and people went into the same cycle that got them into this mess. Like, oh man, I'm going to pre-order this right away. I'm like, you just went through why pre-orders are bad and why we're getting broken games day one, and like, oh gosh, I'm right back on this hype train. I'm like, you didn't even give it time to kind of cool down or stop. You're right back into the same cycle that kind of...
I also never understand what the point of pre-ordering is. You say, like, Atlus games and stuff. Personally, I never had a problem getting any game on even the first or second day. Never did I have an issue, even with, like, small publishers.
There are some. Like, I've had my journey with Sunset Overdrive between the Xbox One bundle and trying to find it in a Target. Nobody has it.
That must be a uniquely American problem, because I've never had
it. And it does happen rarely with smaller publishers, because I know somebody who tried to get hold of a copy of Ni No Kuni and they couldn't for life of them.
Oh, no. Those games.
That game was out everywhere.
On top of that, why is this an issue in now an age where every game is also available digitally?
This is the problem, though, is like, because when you buy a game digitally on a console, you stand to pay significantly more.
Well, I mean, you can also
yeah, but if you really want that game after release, say, right, then you might be okay with paying a couple of bucks more. That's what I mean. So, isn't that necessary need to pre-order? That's all.
Well, speaking of the downloads, I mean, you do get to pre-load it, which adds some actual value, like being able to play right with it on
Box. If it sells out in store, you can buy it online.
Hold on, time out. I think that now that you can pre-order your game, it adds actual value in that you can pay your game when it releases instead of having to wait an hour for it to install.
And it's funny because...
Having to go out to a store and, like...
Going out to a store.
I get what you're saying.
Especially if you're... Because midnight launches never made sense to me, because by the time you get home, you're pretty tired and just go to bed. If you are an adult and have, you know, stuff to do, you probably have work the next day. So end up with a game that you get, but you can't do anything with it until, like, 12
hours. The only midnight launch that I've attended, it made sense, because I was pulling an all-nighter anyway. So I went out, I went and bought Halo Reach at midnight, and then I played it and finished the campaign by the time I had to go to bed. So...
whatever. In that sense, pre-ordering, to me, makes zero sense.
Yeah, it's made definitely...
Even further, it makes less sense for me for pre-ordering for people. But I get this fucking costume or whatever. Why do you need all that trinket shit?
Because publishers can get away with it. Because people want that stuff that is useless. And it's a very vicious cycle.
But I don't get... Don't people learn? I mean, like in this case... I mean, is it worth paying... The 60, or in Europe, in some cases, our games now cost 70 euro. 70 euro. Let that sink in. Is that okay to risk that amount of money on a bad or broken game just so you can have a costume?
Well, and here's the other thing, and we kind of had this discussion before, and we'll probably have it more next week. Part of it is so many games end up being dropped in price so quickly that if you wait a couple of weeks, like for instance, Shadow of Mordor will be $25 next week for us. That's what, 5-6 weeks after launch? I think,
I mean,
you know,
that is a little different because it's Black Friday, but
it is Black Friday. But there's a lot of stores that, I mean, Target buy two get one free. I literally said on this show that I had games throughout the year that I'm just waiting for the sale because I want to buy them. But this is going to be a much better deal instead of buying each game at $60 or waiting for them to be $30 a piece or something like that. Like these things, it's not new. It's not like we're surprised by them, especially at this time of the year. It's been this way for years now, so you kind of know to expect that prices do collapse pretty quickly on those AAA editions. So I think somebody was, I mean, it's a year later, but somebody was selling the Call of Duty Ghost Hardened edition for like $20. That was like $150 at launch. And stuff like that. And especially limited editions are really, if you pre-order them, that you guarantee it, but what happens when stores have excess inventory of that is they drop in price really quickly because there's a very small market for it. And so you'll get stuff like, you know, you'll get something that's $100, like $20-$25 a couple of months later because they can't do anything with it but sell it for cheap and eat the cost. And I guess kind of on the same idea of people hoping for the best and getting disappointed year in, year out, the Game Awards were announced this year. It's not the VGAs, it's not the VGX, it's the Game Awards.
It's the Jeff Keighley Show.
It's the Jeff Keighley Show, which honestly would have been a better name than the Game Awards. I hate the name.
It's a functional name.
Yeah, but nobody says the Movie Awards.
No.
Or, I mean, I guess
talking about somebody who has been the executive producer for the Video Game Awards and
the Video Game
Expo or Video Game X or whatever, you know.
See, here's the thing. How would even accept TGA as a name? And you could say it
stands for the difference.
I think because an acronym doesn't sound like we accepted the VGAs, even though Video Game Awards is really stupid.
I wouldn't say we accepted them. Okay. I always thought they were stupid, too.
Oh, I always thought they were stupid.
For the exact same reason. It's just generic.
Yeah, but we have other ones. We have DICE, and there's the, what is it? The IIS, you know, the awards.
Those are the same.
Oh, are they? But yeah, you know, stuff like that. Be creative.
The BAFTAs.
Even the BAFTAs. Even the Oscars aren't named, like, Oscars aren't named after a movie thing. They're just named after a dude. And even, you know, then you can make, okay, you name it something and then it's the Video Game Awards, just like it's the Academy Awards or something like that, or the Golden Globes. Whatever, name is stupid, but yes. So it seems like Spike has completely dropped video game coverage, which I'm really partially disappointed in because it means that there's probably a chance that the E3 won't be televised next year.
I think it's pretty, I mean, Spike's coverage wasn't any good, so
it was better than nothing. Because
it's not, and the reason is because we have online outlets that provide far better coverage.
I've seen,
so the fact
online,
that it's not on TV, it's like irrelevant.
I've seen a stream of what the Spike thing is like. I guess I don't know if they show all of it also on TV. I guess just a part of it. And let's be honest, if you go over to IGN or GameSpot, they provide the same kind of service, if not better.
My point isn't necessarily that it's better or worse than the coverage. It's just that it exposes it to an audience that may not follow it on IGN or Game Troyers.
But I mean,
how many people watch Spike?
Who is following video games that doesn't frequently access the internet?
Well, that's what I mean. It's like 2014. It's a chance to kind of expand beyond the audience who's already just following video games.
But everyone, there's no, to expand the audience is like, there's nobody that's going to be interested in it who's not like using like technology already.
Well, I mean, it's just it's an argument of semantics. It's basically just saying like, I think just TV makes it easier for people instead of having to track it down or having to deal with buffering or stream. I mean, granted,
having to remember show times and stuff is,
I don't know. I mean, they advertise it for weeks on weeks end. And granted, yes, E3 is a terrible time for most people because it's usually during the middle of the workday and the school day in the summer. So most people probably aren't queued in front of their TV. I'm just saying,
and for us, it's at night times, like midnight and stuff.
Yeah, but you folks didn't. But even that, also with the closure of G4, which G4 I thought had great coverage. But yeah, I mean, again, it's just a matter of whatever. Back to the Video Game Awards. So, QE promises that this will be different, and it seems like it won't have Spike's influence, so it won't have to be dude broed up. But I still don't expect much from this.
I expect it to be boring, if nothing else.
Yeah, I'm kind of going in with an open mind. Like, it will be cool to see what kind of show it is. What's that?
Are you going to be there?
Maybe. Because I will be in Las Vegas already because the following weekend is PlayStation Experience. So
it's the same weekend.
I'll already be there, so I'm thinking about attending the Game Awards.
Isn't it the same weekend?
Yeah, it's the Game Awards are on a Friday evening, and PlayStation Experience is the Saturday and Sunday following.
Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, it's a very confusing how they announced it and how they kind of backpedaled. It has an advisory board, but it seems like it was just like, oh, it's okay for you to have your show on our service, and that was pretty much all they did. So it has like Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft, EA, Ubisoft, Valve, Rockstar, Kojima, who's a company apparently. I think that's it. Am I missing anybody?
No, I'm aware of.
But yeah, it's as far as I know, he's kind of answered a lot of questions on Gaff and I guess on social media. It doesn't seem like there's any. They don't have any role as far as like picking the awards or how it's programmed or how. Or any of that stuff. It seems to be he's paying for it out of pocket, and yeah, I don't know. Do you folks have any expectations for this?
I just expect it to be a very run of the mill affair because it seems to me like Jeff Keighley. The reason why we've had problems with the VGAs and VGX was a disaster is because I think Jeff Keighley's just the kind of guy who goes. Right, we really want to celebrate video games this time, but then doesn't give any more direction other than that. So then it's
well, I think before he had like other people, you know, telling him what the show needs to be like, and they're paying for it, so like that
yeah,
he has to follow.
He's not, and he doesn't sound like the kind of person to really put his foot down. And
well, I mean, this one is him. He's running.
Well, I mean, he can only push so much, you know.
I guess so. But, I just expect it to be very run-of-the-mill. And I hope to God that they have, like, few, like, announcements that are actually things that people are going to be looking, like, very much towards. Not just, oh, here's the Game of Thrones thing from Telltale. And, by the way, we're doing a Borderlands thing at the same time. You know? I just think that, like, I mean, he needs to get it right this time because, you know, the VGA.
Oh, I agree with that, yeah.
It lasted one year, and if it doesn't get it right this time, nobody's going to give a shit next time.
Yep.
I think nobody should in general.
You've got it. Oh, yeah, but, like, if it's something that's really good, then cool, you know? But, like, if he fucks it up, then it's a case of you had your independence, Keighley, and you screwed it, you know?
Totally. I mean, it's up to him to prove it
so
one way or the other. So.
Part, you know?
I think he is a guy that generally cares, but I think the previous iterations of this stuff were severely hampered just by what TV executives want.
Yeah, and that happened. And this one doesn't have that. It has the freedom. It's going to be streaming. I do think it's going to fill on a very low budget. Which I guess is to be expected. And I still kind of worry that they're trying to make it too much of a show instead of making it something, you know, that actually celebrates video games, as they say. So something that, you know, because they already talked about musical performances, which I'm okay with if it's like people performing music from video games and not like some random songs or whatever.
Yeah, I agree.
And stuff like that, and you know he doesn't know if Joe McHale will be there. I'm sure they're gonna find somebody with some type of.
Better not be.
They're gonna
that
find
was
somebody
the whole
with some.
VGX.
That was not the whole problem with VGX.
Well, okay, that was a major problem with VGX.
So yes, and this is December 5th, which I've said I'm really not a fan of award shows that are still in the year that they're covering, but whatever. Yes, I know the counter is what major video games come out after that, but it's still time to kind of digest everything.
Halo 5 Beta could get Game of the Year.
Captain Toad, but... or Lara Croft and the Temple of Osiris. I think that's out in December as well. Yes, that got the aid.
Yeah.
Yes, so there's really no positive news this week, is there? Well, I guess this is somewhat positive. Sony announced that they're giving away free Drive Club DLC, which I'm
Because the game still doesn't fucking work.
That's kind of the thing that I was kind of curious about. Like, it's awesome that you're giving away free DLC, but the problem is people still can't play your game as they want, so what does this DLC do?
It gives you stuff so you can still play more single player.
So you still can't make any clubs with your friends.
Yeah, you can.
That's one of the few things that works.
Yeah, that'll work. The challenges, or not the challenges, that's the thing that isn't working right now. But
I don't know,
multiplayer
like,
works.
I'm still on that odyssey of getting my money back from Sony.
Yeah, I would like to see them giving people their money back instead of here's some stuff for a game that you don't necessarily want to play yet still because it doesn't work completely, you know? If somebody doesn't want to own the game anymore because Sony hasn't managed to fix it, then why, you know, Sony should be giving them their money back.
Well, I mean, it's also based on MPDs. It's not like a ton of people are buying the game either, so...
Oh, it's certainly their own fault.
Yeah, it's, it's not pretty, but we should... I mean, what can you do? I guess give them free DLC and try to fix it. Everybody's fixing their games now. And I guess, kind of on a related note, and I guess this is what we're going to get used to, Bloodborne was delayed into March of next year. It's only about, I think, 5 or 6 weeks or something like that, so it's not awful. And
I'm happy about this because I never thought it made sense to have Bloodborne in the order 2 weeks apart.
Okay, so somebody agrees with me.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense, but to me, since I'm not really interested in the order, it only changes the thing that instead of having to beat Bloodborne before The Witcher 3 is out, now I have to beat The Witcher 3 before Bloodborne is out.
It's going to be even harder.
But yes, I think it's a smart idea for that reason. Though, as Martin says, it means that the Order 1886 has to be a grand slam or it was ready for naught. Because it does mean that they go... I mean, everybody's going to have a huge gap. I think it means they have, 4 months between major excuses? It'll be printed this week and then, I guess, the Order 1886 in February. That's 3 months. I can't do math. I have no idea what Microsoft's order is because they asked for my Halo Master Chief Collection and nothing for the next God knows when. They don't have any release dates. I mean, technically, I guess it would be Quantum Break, but that has no. It's 2015.
Yeah, it's hard to bet on a Remedy release dates considering how long Alan Wake took to come out. So
yeah, there's also. I mean, there's Ori and the Blind Forest, but that's a smaller game, and I don't think they've said anything about it since they haven't really been talking about it much. I mean, I guess we can end on this, even though I kind of vetoed it in the show notes. Battletoad copyright or trademark was filed this week, so we get that
by Microsoft, of course.
Right, well, yeah. So let's hear their excitement for Battletoad. Huh, quiet. Go figure.
Yeah.
What sounds do tumbleweeds make? I forget.
Let's be honest, Battletoad was never good.
The best thing about Battletoads was the beat.
I was going to say the best thing was the team up with Double Dragon.
But even that game wasn't good.
It was fun. It was better than the actual Battletoad, which is all you remembered because it was a god-awful game to try to beat because it was broken as hell. In a different way, in that it was tough as hell. It was kind of a game made for arcades where it was trial and error gaming.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't even know who would make that
Well, I mean, like, Rare has
Rare.
Stock too.
Yeah, Rare.
Stuff,
so. Yeah, almost.
Maybe they can make a proper game for once, even if it is bad.
Well, I mean, because Phil Spencer did tease that he just saw Rare's new game this week, and Battletoad trademark came out at the same time. Who isn't excited for new Battletoad? Because that is clearly the audience that Microsoft has fostered over the last decade, is the 2D beat-em-up crowd. Or 3D beat-em-up crowd. I don't know what
you
the hell
you'd
make Battletoad.
You say that, though, but they may have still released a good fighting game.
Yeah.
So.
But, I mean, to be fair, Microsoft has kind of had the advantage. They've had Street Fighter, they've had Marvel vs. Capcom, they've had Soul Calibur, they've had Dead or Alive. So they've had a constant stream of fighting games where there isn't a ton of big... In general, there isn't a ton of big beat-em-ups on the market in general, let alone from a first-party perspective. Maybe they want to build an audience on that. Who knows? So, yeah. Is there anything else you folks want to talk about this week before we wrap?
Today, the day we're recording, is the one-year anniversary of the PS4.
Which a lot of people have taken to task. And... not got
yeah,
the
where's
best.
The? How about that PlayStation Plus version of Drive Club? In the first year. I'm kidding.
Yeah, it's been if you want to, we kind of did a mini report called on those on the rocks this past week on the three major platforms with the 1 year release of the Xbox One and PS4 and the 2 years of the Wii U. Honestly, even though I own two of them, I don't think any one of them is a spectacular system right now. So yeah, it is that. I think this is over an hour and 20 minutes already. So I think we'll be back next week to talk about Black Friday deals. There are a couple of interesting ones, but there isn't too many knockouts. It's a really good Black Friday if you're interested in the Xbox One, though. And we'll be back next week with hopefully, well, I know I'll have Smash Brothers. There are like 50 new games coming out this Tuesday, including Little Big Planet 3, Far Cry 4, Dragon Age Inquisition. And did I say Little Big Planet 3 already?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. Oh, and if you're
GTA.
Oh, GTA 5 again. And if you are a masochist, WWE 2K15. So there's that. Pokemon Off Ruby and Omega Sci-Fi is out this Friday as well. And Amiibo's
in America.
And in America. Amiibo's launch this week, and if you're interested in any of those, one, don't check out Loot Crate because that deal's a ripoff. Two, do check out Toys R Us. They have a buy 3 for $30 deal, which saves you about $9. And maybe you can figure out what Amiibo's do and tell us, because I still don't know what the purpose of them are.
I'm going to buy one. But
I might.
You also made me reconsider which one I get. Because of you, I'm now getting Mario, although that's not my favorite. I'm just getting him because he's apparently going to work with most games.
Yeah,
so I can test that feature out with every game.
Yes, the most valuable Amiibos to get at launch would be Mario, Inc. And I think those would be the big two, because they're the only ones that have multiple games compatibility that's worth a damn.
After that, Samus and Fox.
I think Peach.
I just want a couple because they look cool. I don't even really, and they're affordable. The game stuff is almost secondary. I'm like, okay, I'll try it out because I'll have them anyway.
I mean, I think I'm gonna get a few because one, I think I'm gonna do Toys R Us with Smash Brothers, and if you do it at Toys R Us, you get a free Amiibo, and I'll just do that for Mario, and then I get three. I'm going to get the Shulk one because there is not a good chance that we're gonna have a lot of Xenoblade Chronicles stuff, so I need something that reminds me of that awesome game, and that's out in February, and just to be infuriating and be Nintendo, it's exclusive to GameStop, just like Xenoblade Chronicles when it launched. So that's special that they went back to that well. And I think a couple of other ones will be retail exclusive. And as far as I know, that's an American-only thing, because you folks don't have that same restriction, so yay. So yes, for Martin, Daniel, Jason, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 161.